Everyone's got a book. We'll do our invocation on page one. Do it responsively. Krishna, 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 Krishna,
hey. Krishna, 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 Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, hey.
Krishna, 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 Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Rakshamam.
Krishna, 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 Rakshamam.
Krishna, 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 Pahi Mam.
Krishna, 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 Pahi Mam.
Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshamam. Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Pahi Mam.
Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Pahi Mam.
Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hey.
Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, 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 Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Rakshamam.
Krishna, 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 Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna,
Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshamam.
Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava,
Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Pahi Mam.
Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava,
Krishna, 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 hey.
Krishna, 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 Krishna,
hey. Krishna, 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 hey.
Krishna, 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 Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Rakshamam.
Krishna, 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 Rakshamam.
Krishna, 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 Pahi Mam.
Krishna, 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 Pahi Mam.
Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshamam.
Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava,
Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Pahe Ma.
Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Pahe Ma.
All right, we'll turn to the preface on Roman numeral page 11. We've done this before, maybe 3 months ago, but for those of you who've heard it before, it gets sweeter and sweeter every time. Katrina, you've read part of the Krishna book before? Okay. Nivritta tarsaya upagiyamana bhavosa dachchocha manobiramat kautama shloka gunanubharat pumandirajita vina pashubna. This is a Sanskrit verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. The English translation is not there, so I'll tell you what it means. Nivritta tarsaya means one who is free from all material hankerings. One who has gotten rid of his thirst for material enjoyment. That kind of person takes great pleasure in hearing about Krishna and talking about Krishna. In fact, really only that kind of person can take pleasure in these transcendental talks of Krishna. Because as long as you still have some hankering to enjoy this world, it's like your cup is already full of ink, for example, so how can anyone pour milk into it? So if you're feeling satisfied by material existence, or you're trying to be satisfied by material existence, you don't have any room in your life for the transcendental glories of Krishna. And what is the nature of the transcendental glories of Krishna? Bhava siddhach chotra manobiramat. Bhava. Bhava aushadi. This Sanskrit word means the disease of repeated birth and death. You see, most people, they take birth and death to be a part of nature. It's just a part of life. However, the Vedic literatures will teach you that birth and death is a disease. It can be cured. This is an extraordinary difference. Generally, people don't like to think about birth, death, old age, and disease at all. And if they do, they just say, that's life, that's the way it is, we all got to go sometime. But here you're getting an understanding, bhavosiddhach. There's a disease, just like there's a disease called cancer, there's a disease called pneumonia, there's also a disease called bhava, becoming and unbecoming. That's what the Sanskrit word bhava means. So, it's an affliction, it's a contamination, it's an infection. And you can get rid of the infection or contamination of repeated birth and death if you know how to treat it. Just like you can get rid of diseases that most people are familiar with today, you can get rid of them if you know how to treat them. So, glorification of Krishna will treat that disease of repeated birth and death. And what is the nature of the treatment? Is it harsh? Is it painful? Is it like chemotherapy or something? Is it excruciating? No. Bhavo siddhach drukta manobirama. It's like the cooling rays of the moon. You see, in traditional Indian society, everybody knew that the sun's rays, they can exhaust you. Just like in India, they have an expression that no one goes out during midday except mad dogs and Englishmen. It's a joke from the times of English colonization. That the British first came to India, and they just didn't know that. They couldn't figure out why all the cities and towns just shut down at midday and you can't find any workers anywhere, because the workers know it's like the sun is most overbearing at that time, and therefore
you know, it's siesta time. You know, it's time to sleep, you know. You take your midday meal and go to sleep. So, but the British, they came, they evidently didn't know that. They just figured, you know, daytime means work. Of course, they had the Indians to do most of the manual work. You know, the British were the bureaucrats. So they were wondering, where are all our servants? Where are all the workers? So the Indians developed that expression that no one tries to get anything done during midday. No one stays outside during midday except mad dogs and Englishmen. But the moon's rays, that's something different altogether. The rays of the moon are very soothing. Therefore, in India, in traditional families, they'll have a chair on a swing in the garden of the house. And when the man comes home from work, he sits in that chair and swings in the moonlight, because the rays of the moon are very soothing for the mind. So the glorification of Krishna is being compared to that. It's the cure for the disease of birth and death, and it's very soothing, like the moon rays. The moon does affect the mind. Why do you think you have this expression, even in the English language, lunatic? That means someone who is affected adversely by the moon. It's a fact that when the full moon comes, some people who are very loose in their mind, they actually lose it for a few days. You know this? So that's where the English word lunatic comes from. These are subtle material knowledge. This is subtle material knowledge that, yeah, people are too gross today to appreciate. But it was considered ordinary humdrum knowledge in India prior to the industrialization after so-called independence. So, glorification of Krishna is like that, the cooling rays of the moon. But not for the mind. The mind is external, just like the body is. Cooling rays of the moon for the soul. Ka uttama sloka gunanuvada. Krishna is praised by the greatest of shlokas. Shloka, Sanskrit meaning verse. The greatest verses, the most expert poetry, the most perfect creative presentations are all used to glorify Krishna. Who would not take advantage of this method? Puman virajeta vina pashugna. Only one kind of person, which is actually two. Pashugna means the butcher. Someone who is partaking in animal slaughter, such an abominable thing that they lose all their sensibilities and they'll not be interested in glorifying Krishna. But not only someone who's butchering animals, the word pashugna refers to butchers in general. That means someone who's butchering animals and also someone who's butchering their own life. Someone who's intent, hell-bent on committing suicide. What does that mean? Euthanasia? It doesn't simply mean that. It means someone who lives their life and totally has no idea what the human form of life is meant for. That's known as butchering your life, committing suicide. So only those two kind of persons, the animal butcher and the butcher of one's own self, those two persons, those two kinds of butchers, will not be attracted to glorification about Krishna. Is any questions so far? You see, on Monday nights, for those of you maybe here for the first time, we go a little deeper than we usually do. Friday night is our Bhagavad Gita night, and Monday nights is kind of like the advanced night. But that's okay, you're all welcome. But we do go a little more in-depth, and we kind of don't fuss around too much with introductory terms. Any questions about anything?
Does the pineal gland get affected by the sun as well? Is it the sun and the moon?
No question. I'm not going to. Any questions about what we've been discussing? All right, let's start to read. In the Western countries, when someone sees the cover of a book like Krishna, you see the cover, and we're in the Western countries, see the cover, okay. He immediately asks, who is Krishna? Who is the girl of Krishna? And so forth. Anyone want to ask those questions?
Who's the girl of Krishna?
Okay. Anyone feel going to ask who is Krishna? Yeah. Just say who is Krishna?
Krishna.
Okay, you fulfilled the first paragraph. All right. We'd like to read next. Di, you want to read the next paragraph?
The immediate answer is that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. So is that?
How is that?
How is that? Because he conforms in exact detail to the descriptions of the supreme being, Godhead. In other words, Krishna is the Godhead because he is all attractive. Outside the principle of all attraction, there is no meaning to the word Godhead. How is it that one can be all attractive? First of all, if one is very wealthy, if he has great riches, he becomes attracted to people in general. Similarly, if someone is very powerful, he also becomes attractive, and if someone is very famous, he also becomes attractive, and if someone is very beautiful or wise or unattached to all kinds of possessions, he also becomes attractive. So from practical experience, we can observe that one is attractive due to one, wealth, two, power, three, fame, four, beauty, five, wisdom, and six, renunciation. One who is in possession of all six of these opulences at the same time, possesses them to an unlimited degree, is understood to be the supreme personality of Godhead. These opulences of the Godhead are delineated by
Parashuramuni,
a great Vedic authority.
All right, so what to say about this? Ben?
from what I see is that what I've come into contact in the material world has been just a base sort of shadow of what Krishna has as far as wealth, power, fame, beauty, wisdom and renunciation, yeah?
Yes, this is extraordinarily powerful, this explanation. There's a lot of implicit understanding packed into this paragraph. First of all, you are being focused on, you're being made to focus on what actually is attracting you. First, you're recognizing there's something known as attraction. Well, we all know that. We get attracted to things, attracted to people. But rarely do we actually focus on this principle of attraction. And we're being, our attraction is being analyzed in six categories: wealth, strength, beauty, fame, enunciation, knowledge. Now think of something else other than those six things that attract, that you might think attracts you. Can you think of anything else? Could you think of anything else, David?
Compassion.
Compassion would fit under renunciation.
No.
Right. Anyone try anything else? So the Vedas, these spiritual texts of India, they have expertly delineated these six categories because there's no other thing to be attracted to except one of these six things. So as Ben was talking about, he's realized that in the temporary material world, you'll find these things in a shadow way. You won't find their full spiritual potency. You won't find that in this shadow world. But shadow world means there must be light somewhere. By that I mean, the shadow representation has its real representation, its real origin somewhere, just like the shadow has light somewhere. The real thing. If I make a shadow on the floor here, there it is, you can see my hand. So, you know that shadow is referring to the real hand. So if you understand that this is a shadow world, what does the shadow of the world refer to? What's the real thing? Now let's talk about the origin of everything. To understand Krishna, you have to understand two things. That there are energies and that there is the origin of all energies. Many times, people who become interested in spiritual knowledge, they make a mistake of thinking that the origin of everything, the Supreme Absolute Truth, has to be impersonal. It's an extraordinary mistake. It's based on a philosophical speculation that all the forms and varieties that I've experienced in this world cause pain. They're temporary. They cause problems. Therefore, the Supreme must be without variety, without personality, without form. This is complete speculation. But if you don't take your knowledge from the Vedic literatures, and instead you try to figure everything out on your own with your limited brain, that is the conclusion you'll come to. That, well, we see this world of variety and personalities and individuality. It's caused so many problems and pain. I know what the solution is. Eradicate all that. And then impersonalism. That is the ultimate. Because personality always means problem. Means ego. Individuality always means selfishness. This is a very bad mistake. But we cannot get over that mistake unless we take our information from the right source. No one here will say that you are everything. That means you are part of something. Now, if you're the part and you have personality and you're just a tiny little part, how is it that the source of everything has no personality? Doesn't make sense. The source of everything has to have everything you have and infinite more. So Krishna has everything you have and infinite more. And all varieties exist in Krishna in perfection. There's no imperfection. Whereas all varieties in this world are tinged by imperfection. So there's a great mistake. Many people think that the Supreme Absolute Truth is impersonal and is only out of some kind of illusion that personality and individuality has manifested. You will not find this conclusion in the Vedic texts. Many times, people who don't know the Vedas, they just pull out fragments and they say, aha. You might have heard some people say, soham. That means, I am that. And they use that to mean, I am also the Supreme. But actually it doesn't mean that. Soham, I am that, means I have the same quality as Krishna, but not the same quantity. Just like a spark of fire has the same quality as the fire, but it's not the same in quantity. Tat tvamasi, you are that. You are spirit. You are. That means you have the same quality as the Supreme Spirit, but nowhere is it said in the Vedic text that you have the same quantity. Some people, they really have a problem with this. It's what happens when you do not hear from a proper source of information. So, we are being presented head-on with Krishna, the all-attractive personality of Godhead. The source of all energies is personal. Now, a person can act impersonally. Many times, I'm sure, when you are in bad moods, you can treat Ben impersonally when you're mad at him, right?
Yeah.
So you're a person who acts impersonally. There has to be a person for there to be impersonalism. Otherwise, it's total nonsense. So, there is an impersonal manifestation, but it's dependent on Krishna. This is stated in Bhagavad Gita. Brahmano hi pratishtaham. Krishna says, I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, the impersonal all-pervading spiritual energy. It's based on me. So Krishna can display himself as impersonal, but that's just part of Krishna's show, so to speak. Just like you can behave impersonally when you want to. But when you're not mad at him anymore, you reveal your personal charms again, right? So, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says the same thing. He says, I'm not manifest to everyone. I reserve the right whom I reveal myself to. So some people only get to see Krishna's impersonal manifestation. Because you have to have qualification to see Krishna. Nevertheless, the fact is that ultimately, the absolute truth is personal. And a lot of people have problems with that. Why? Because they figure personal always means limited. How can Krishna be unlimited, infinite, and still be a person, still be an individual? Impossible. But any person you know of is limited. But Krishna is a person and is unlimited. But because we're addicted to mental or philosophical speculation, we wrongly conclude that personal must always mean limited. And you cannot understand Krishna book as long as that barrier is in your mind. As soon as you hear person, you think limited. Or even worse, you hear the word person, personality of God, and you think mythology. Must be some kind of Greek stories or Roman mythology. What about if I ask Andrew here, what about your personality and the things you do? He'll tell you, surfing. I suppose I say, oh, you're just a myth. It's all mythological. He'll be very offended. And he's just a tiny little thing. So if he has personality, activities, qualities, a form, why cannot the Supreme Absolute Truth have those things? But Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes, activities, they have nothing to do with matter. They're infinite, unlimited, unblemished, pure spiritual. That is the difference. So these points are to help clear away any cobwebs and barriers in our mind about how to understand Krishna. Big problem. I was just in New Plymouth at Patrina's house. This is Patrina, for those who don't know. So, we had a nice program at her house last night, and one man began to explain that, well, how did he say it, Rick? Krishna manifested from the universal oneness. Out of the universal oneness, Krishna manifested and he became a baby, and then he grew up into being the Supreme. Now, you'll not find this at all in Bhagavad Gita. In fact, in Bhagavad Gita you'll find that Krishna says, Abhijanati mamuta manushim sarvashrutam. Fools think this. They think that first I was unmanifest, impersonal, and then I became manifest, personal. Fools think this. No, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains himself that I always have a transcendental body, ever existing. And I can appear to take birth in this world, just like the sun appears to rise in the morning. The sun is always there in its position, but sometimes we see it and sometimes not. Krishna is always established in his eternal, infinite personhood, but sometimes you may see and sometimes you may not see. So it's not that some universal force has taken the form of Krishna temporarily in this world. Oh. You never will understand Krishna book with that kind of understanding, or that kind of mistaken understanding. No. The Krishna book is presenting to you how the ultimate source of everything is the Supreme Person. But not person like you know. Not limited. Not deluded. Not conditioned. But unlimited, unblemished, infinite pleasure. Krishna's nature is infinite pleasure. Now why is it that you, the tiny part of Krishna, have a desire to enjoy your pleasure-seeking? Why is that? Because you're a part of Krishna, and Krishna has this pleasure-seeking desire unlimitedly. Can you imagine unlimited desire for pleasure? You can't conceive of that. Krishna has an unlimited desire for pleasure and also the instant ability to satisfy his own unlimited desires for pleasure. Now how are you going to compete with that? You can't. But when you hear about Krishna, you get the same pleasure that Krishna gets. Not by imitating Krishna, but by hearing about Krishna. I hope we're breaking through some cobwebs about Krishna and this whole thing of personal, impersonal. Some of you, you are acquainted with this kind of Puff, you're acquainted with this kind of discussion?
Yeah.
David? Ben?
Yes.
Okay. So I hope that was helpful. What does Krishna mean? This Sanskrit term Krishna means all attractive. The Supreme has unlimited names because the Supreme Absolute Truth is unlimited. But the Vedic texts say that Krishna is the chief name because in the name Krishna you'll find all the other names. How is that? Krishna means all attractive. All attractive, that includes everything. Whatever Krishna does, whatever qualities Krishna has, however Krishna looks, it's all attractive. Therefore, Krishna is the chief name of the Supreme Absolute Truth. What are we doing in this world? We are trying to fulfill our attractions to different things, and we're also trying to attract others. Attraction is the name of the game. Everyone wants to be attracted to something. But we fail to understand that the source of all the attractiveness, that is Krishna. And when we read the Krishna book, we'll understand. Any questions at this point? Yes. First of all, to vibrate those Vedic sounds, you have to have a whole lifestyle of severe austerity and penance, such as you will not find today, unless you go to the top of the Himalaya Mountains or something and find some sages up there. And they're living a life of complete austerity beyond what you could ever conceive of, and they do vibrate so they're hoping that by their austerities they will merge into what they think is the ultimate. They think the ultimate's impersonal. And by vibrating that sound, they think, they hope that they'll become part of that ultimate impersonal. But the problem is, the ultimate is not impersonal. So therefore, you'll read later in Krishna book a verse from the Vedic text Srimad Bhagavatam where it's explained that it's imaginary liberation. After so many austerities and penances, you imagine you're liberated, but it never happens because the ultimate is not impersonal. There is a phase that's impersonal, just like clouds cover the sun. But you can't stay in that phase because you are a person and you can't stamp out your individuality. Just like Dai cannot act impersonally non-stop day after day. What's the longest you've given him a cold shoulder for? You can't keep it up though, right? Similarly, you cannot merge into the impersonal energy and stay there. It's not possible. You can, for those who actually can even pull it off, which is doubtful in this age, they can only stay there a short time because you cannot stamp out your personality. You are individual. You're not the material identity, but you do have a spiritual identity and you can't stamp it out. But if you are envious of Krishna, we are all Krishna, we are all the same, then you become caught up in this impersonal meditation. You waste a lot of energy. There's some power there. And people who don't know any better, they become very captivated by persons who have developed this power from impersonal meditation. People who don't know any better think it's, whoa, it's, wow, it's amazing. Those who know better. It's like when I was traveling in Thailand, I would talk to these Buddhist monks, very austere, and they would be doing their impersonal meditation, and they have the ability to look at you and just make you feel like you're all of a sudden you're one with your one with everything. So they think it's a very big deal. They're used to people when they do that. Loosely we call it zapping. They can zap you. They can just look at you, and you just feel like, you know, you're one with the chair, one with the ceiling, and you're. It's like you've lost your personal identity. It's like someone takes a flash camera and gets right up in your face and you just, you know. So most people, 99% of people who have that experience, they think, oh, this must be a great spiritual teacher. What an experience, what a mystical experience. But if you know better, you just take it as a real botheration. Just like if I came up in your face, right? You know, 1 inch from your face and took a flash picture, you know, I can just take it as a botheration. You wouldn't think, wow, what a mystical experience. So when I was traveling in Thailand, I had to kind of endure that several times, you know. Because the Buddhist monks, they like to show their prowess, and they figure if they show their prowess like that, their ability to zap, then you'll become their disciple. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, touching a high voltage wire, you know, you just, and, you know, me, I'm just, you know, I went, you know, it's like, you know, just being caught in a sudden downpour of rain or something. And when's it going to be over? You calm down, you know. I got better things to do. But most people, they get bewildered by it. They think, wow, this is the most intense spiritual thing I've ever experienced. I'm going to also be like this and do like this. Very dangerous. Why is everyone so anxious to give up their personality and individuality? Who can say? Ben?
Could you repeat that?
Sorry. Why are people so eager to give up their individuality and personality? Anyone have any clue?
Material gain. I don't know if I'm right, but I was thinking if you get up your individuality, it can be for material purposes. Material gain.
Like what? Can you explain that?
I was thinking along the lines of like personality, like film stars and movie stars and that sort of person. to a degree, give up your individuality to sort of become a person.
I see what you mean. I didn't mean like that.
Yeah.
I meant, why would you think of totally obliterating your identity? Whatever you think, at its deepest core, not just a movie star selling out to Hollywood, but totally, why would you want to cease being a person? Why?
Painful.
I guess.
Get rid of all pain and suffering and obliterate it.
And what would you hope for then?
A release from that. But it doesn't, that kind of impossible thing to include that infinite pleasure that you're talking about. It's a different impulse from the infinite pleasure.
I'm sorry, the last thing?
I mean, you're talking about the infinite pleasure, that impulse to obliterate yourself. It doesn't seem that impossible to be the same as that. They're trying to obliterate your personality.
Yes, because for you to experience the ultimate attraction coming from Krishna, you need your individuality, but not your material individuality. This is my problem. Actually, when I was traveling in Thailand, even some of the Buddhist monks, they would confide in me. They said, you know, when we say no self, we don't really mean that completely. We do accept that there is a spiritual self, but we don't want the people to get confused, because they'll think that when we talk about spiritual self, they'll think that means the self that they are familiar with. So why do you guys talk about it? You know, won't people get confused? I said, I think they'll get much more confused by thinking that the ultimate goal is to have no self than to think that their material self is a spiritual self. So anyway, these are just some adventures in Thailand. But there can be no spiritual perfection without your individuality. But it has to be your pure individuality. And what does pure individuality mean? That you are part of Krishna and you have a relationship of pure love. So these are some preliminary understandings to get you into Krishna book. So who would like to read next? Ben?
We have seen many rich persons, many powerful persons, many famous persons, many beautiful persons, many learned and scholarly persons, persons in the renounced order of life, unattached to material possessions. But we have never seen anyone who is unlimitedly and simultaneously wealthy, powerful, famous, beautiful, wise, and unattached, like Krishna, in the history of humanity.
Now let's think about that. Unlimitedly deep in all these six things, simultaneously. You've seen somebody who's a little bit beautiful, somebody who's a little bit wealthy, but unlimitedly, infinitely deep in all these six things at the same time. Have not seen. But that is the supreme absolute truth. That is the cause of all causes. That is Krishna. Go on, please.
Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead, is a historical person who appeared on the earth 5,000 years ago. He stayed on this earth for 125 years and played exactly like a human being. But his activities were unparalleled. From the very moment of his appearance to the moment of his disappearance, every one of his activities is unparalleled in the history of the world. And therefore, anyone who knows what we mean by Godhead will accept Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead. No one is equal to the Godhead, and no one is greater than him. That is the import of the familiar saying, God is great.
Yes, so many people talk about this word God, or else they talk about, like, what is, or the ultimate, or ultimate reality. But when you ask them, please describe, give us some idea what you're talking about. Oh, I can't say, or it can't be described in words, or as soon as you try to talk about it, it disappears. Or so, Srila Prabhupada would always say, when you say that, it means you might as well just say you don't know. Better just say I don't know than all these cover-ups. Just like here is Sue. So, how shall we refer to Sue? There's that force over there. There's that entity. That something. That special something. And naturally, you would ask, well, can you tell us something about that something? That force over there, that entity? And you say, oh,
I have things I want to like.
Mm-hmm.
I have things I want to like.
Like what?
Like what you described. It says here that there hasn't been anyone. And then there has and there is.
Unlimitedly and simultaneously deep in all these things.
Yeah. I've seen them a third of the time.
Unlimitedly, infinitely deep in all these things.
In terms of famous and wealthy. Well, the limitations there, he's not famous and he's not.
Then,
wealthy, but he's deep.
Then, sorry, doesn't make it. As you say in American baseball, strike one, strike two, strike three, you're out. Unlimitedly beautiful, infinitely beautiful, infinitely beautiful. So that, you know what, infinite beauty, you can't conceive of what infinite beauty is. Krishna's beauty is so great that when birds fly overhead, they drop out of the sky. Yeah, no understanding of that. Krishna is so beautiful that he becomes attracted even to his own reflection. Who is this beautiful person? Unlimited strength? So if, just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna reveals his universal form. So someone who claims they are the supreme, they must show the universal form. They must show how all the universes, not just one universe, all the universes are situated, resting on them. Infinitely deep in all six things. You don't even know anyone who's infinitely deep in one of these things. I don't think of six. Infinitely deep in knowledge, who can speak a book like Bhagavad Gita? Not possible. Source of all energies. In order to be infinitely deep in all power, you have to be the source of all energies. Not possible. Yes, possible for Krishna. The position's already filled. That is the point. The position is already filled. So.
But that's like Christianity then. Christianity is the position's already filled.
But, true, that's a good point. There is the Supreme, but you must find out the most information you can about that Supreme. So, alright, Christianity does say there is God the Father. God, we were just talking about that, but you must get some information.
There is a lot. About this person. Not many people have approached because he is a fire. He also burns people up. He has infinite compassion, infinite wisdom that never come across. But he is also a fire.
Infinite knowledge.
That's right.
Just speak one book like Bhagavad Gita. Mm-hmm. One book.
Mm-hmm.
Infinite beauty. That infinite beauty means. you can't give infinite beauty like.
So it takes the recognition. I thought there could be someone who is in front of Krishna, the physical Krishna, and not recognize
physical Krishna.
As 5,000 years ago, there would be people who wouldn't necessarily recognize the divine in front of them.
Let's put it another way. I can say one thing, you can say another thing, but if you're speaking in terms of the standard Vedic literatures, there's always a test who is actually what. So it's, otherwise I can say I believe this, you can say you believe that. I can just say, guess what? I brought Petrina here with me. She is the Supreme. I could say that. And Sue could say, hey, back in Brisbane, I've got an avatar there. We all could say that. But what is the standard? There has to be a standard. The standard is the Vedic text, not our imaginations. Otherwise, I can fly in and say this. I can, you know, grow my beard long, put on a saffron robe or something, or and I am the avatar. I am that that I am. I am that I am. And the Vedic texts are the actual standard to judge. So any real spiritual teacher in India always refers to the Vedic texts. They're the law book. No one just becomes a self-proclaimed avatar incarnation, manifesting only to a few people. Never, it's not, that is not. Otherwise, we all can just imagine so many things. So we speak authoritatively here. We use the Vedas. We do not use our imagination. Otherwise, I could have my delusions, you could have yours, she could have hers. Yeah. I could say to you, have you heard about the ice cream god? Full of three free flavors simultaneously.
First of all,
we have the Vedic law books. They say what is what. Firstly, I may think I'm the Supreme, but I just don't see myself described in any of the Vedic texts. Let's see. Am I there? Can you see me there somewhere? We can think so many crazy things, but we have to consult these standard law books. And anybody who is authorized in spiritual science, they use the Vedic texts. These are the standard law books. Otherwise, I can say one thing, you can say another thing. So it's not just I'm giving my opinion. My opinion is useless. It's like I could say I brought the Petrina God here. She's infinitely attractive, you just can't see it.
If you found the attraction of Krishna, your life is about bringing people to that. Attraction that you...
Our life is based on the Vedic texts. We do not whimsically concoct things. Our life is based on the Vedic texts. That's why we're studying the Vedic texts here. Otherwise, I could sit up here and tell you so many things. I could tell you about the baseball god. I could make it sound very interesting for a while. But we are here to study the standard spiritual texts, the Vedic literatures. And that's what everything we do is based on. And these Vedic texts, they are the lives of the greatest transcendentalists are based on the Vedic texts. Yes. They contain accounts not only of life on this planet, but other planets, even life before the creation of the universe. So that is the point. Otherwise we can get real ridiculous, you know? So bear that in mind as you're hearing Krishna book. That this Krishna book is the summary study of a Vedic literature called Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not just Swami Prabhupada's imagination. It's a summarized account of a Sanskrit text. Uh-huh. Who's next? Andrew.
There are various classes of men in the world who speak of God in different ways, but according to the Vedic literatures and according to the great Acharyas, the authorized persons versed in the knowledge of God in all ages, like Acharyas, Sankara, Brahma, Nuja, Madhva, Vishnu, Swami, Lord Chaitanya, and all their followers by disciple succession, all unanimously agree that Krishna is the supreme personality of God.
Everything must be corroborated by the standard Vedic texts and the Acharyas. Acharyas means those who are expert in the Vedic texts. Go on.
As far as we, the followers of Vedic civilization, are concerned, we accept the Vedic history of the whole universe, which consists of different planetary systems called Svarga Lokas, or the higher planetary system,
Marcha Lokas,
or the intermediary planetary systems, and Atala Lokas, or the lower planetary system. The modern historians of this earth cannot supply historical evidence of events that occurred before 5,000 years ago. And the anthropologists say that 40,000 years ago, Homo sapiens had not appeared on this planet because evolution had not reached that point.
Now they're pushing that date further back. I forgot what the latest date is now. It's getting back there. It might even be back to 100,000 years. Every year they push it back. It started then. It started back then.
The Vedic histories, the Puranas and the Mahabharata, relate human histories which extend millions and billions of years into the past. For example, from these literatures we are given the histories of Krishna's appearances and disappearances millions and billions of years ago. In the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna that both he and Arjuna had many births before, and that he, Krishna, could remember all of them, and that Arjuna could not. This illustrates the difference between the knowledge of Krishna and that of Arjuna. Arjuna might have been a very great warrior, a well-cultured member of the Kuru dynasty, but after all, he was an ordinary human being, whereas Krishna, the supreme personality of God, is the possessor of unlimited knowledge. Because he possesses unlimited knowledge, Krishna has a memory that is bound.
In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna that I spoke this knowledge of the Gita before, millions of years ago, to the chief person in charge of the sun planet. So then Arjuna says, Krishna, how could you have done that? I mean, you're about the same age as me. So how is it that I should understand that millions of years ago you spoke this same knowledge you're speaking to me now? You spoke it to the chief executive of the sun planet. And then Krishna told him, Bhuni Mevati Tani, Janmani Tapacharjuna. Many, many appearances, many, many births, Arjuna, both you and I have had. I can remember all of them. You don't. Because Krishna doesn't appear in a material body. He has no material body. Therefore, he doesn't lose knowledge from one birth to another. Because actually, for Krishna, there's no birth. It's an appearance. It seems like a birth, but it's simply an appearance. Krishna appears. Does not take birth. The more we talk about Krishna, the more things become clear. The more we hear the authorized Vedic texts, the more we understand it. Real spiritual science is not something whimsical, not some fancy. It's not a question of my mystical experience and your mystical experience. It's not a question of I had this flash of light in my head and now, that's why we're studying these books. The world is suffering greatly from a lack of genuine spiritual education. People don't know what is what. And they get themselves into a lot of trouble in that way. Sue, would you like to read?
Krishna's knowledge is so perfect that he remembers all the incidents of his experiences some millions and billions of years in the past. But Arjuna's memory and knowledge are limited by time and space, for he is an ordinary human being. In the fourth chapter, Krishna says that he can remember instructing the lessons of the Bhagavad Gita from millions of years ago to the sun god Bhushan. Nowadays, it is the fashion of the atheistic class of men to try to become God by following some mystic process. Generally, the atheists claim to be God by dint of their imagination or the meditation of Paris. Krishna is not that kind of God. He does not become God by manufacturing some mystic process of meditation, nor does he become God by undergoing the severe austerities of the mystic yogic exercises. Properly speaking, he never becomes God because he is the Godhead in all circumstances.
Yes. Position is already filled, and the part and parcel of the entities cannot fill the position. Now, there are different realizations of the Supreme Godhead according to your particular capacity for understanding. The Vedic literatures give the most comprehensive understanding. Some people just say God, some people say God is great, God is good. But the full glories of the Supreme Absolute Truth, as much as can be understood by human beings, that is revealed in the Vedic texts. It's not that there is the Christian God, the Mohammedan God, the Vedic God. No. They're just different degrees of comprehensiveness. Just like you have an unabridged dictionary and you have an abridged dictionary. It's not that the abridged dictionary is wrong, it just doesn't have as much detail in it as the unabridged dictionary. You want to read next, Katrina? Within the prison?
Within the prison of this material uncle, Krishna appeared as his father in another looking body. Krishna appeared outside his mother's body as a four-handed missionary. And he turned himself into a baby and told his father to carry him to the house of Nanda, Maharaja, and his wife.
Yes, this is describing Krishna's birth, so-called. He appeared outside the womb of his mother in his four-handed form, Narayan, and then, to satisfy her, changed himself into the form of a baby. But that doesn't mean he lost his power as the ultimate, supreme, unlimited. No. In any form, Krishna is the same infinite power. It's not that, as someone was saying last night, Krishna had to develop his power from babyhood. No. You're going to hear how 3 months old he killed the Putana demon when he was just 3 months old. Go on.
But when he stepped to a priest, he pulled out his wife. It is the difference between the real God and a God manifested in the mystic factory. Krishna had no chance to practice the mystic yoga process, yet he manifested himself as the supreme personality of God at every step. Well, in fact, as a child, in his book, Krishna all of his activities as a human being at the time. Although Krishna plays like a human being, he always maintains his identity in the supreme personality of God.
Yes, you never read in the Vedic literatures of Krishna looking anything older than a young man at the peak of youthful attraction. You never read that anywhere. Krishna, his appearance in this world was 125 years, but he He never looked anything more than a young person. Frazier, next.
Since Krishna is the all-attractive, one should know that all his desires should be focused on Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the individual person is the proprietor or master of his own body, but that Krishna, who is the super soul present in everyone's heart, is the supreme proprietor and supreme master of each and every individual body.
Yes. I, as individual soul, am conscious of what goes on in my body. But I can't say what goes on in your body. In each body there is soul and super soul. Krishna is the super soul. We are the soul. So we only know, maybe even, what goes on in our body. But we don't know what goes on in everybody's body. But Krishna, as a super soul, does that. He knows. So there are two knowers in every body. There is the soul and the super soul. Don't confuse them as one and the same. That's a drastic mistake. This is explained more in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. There are two owners or proprietors of the body. One is limited, the other is unlimited. So, if I am the Supreme, I should be able to tell you what goes on inside your body. But actually, I can't even remember what I did yesterday at this time. Go on, please. You read very nicely.
As such, if we concentrate our loving propensities upon Krishna only, then immediately universal love, unity, and tranquility will be the automatic realized. One who waters the root of a tree, he automatically waters the branches, twigs, leaves, and flowers. When one supplies food to the stomach through the mouth, he satisfies all the various parts of the body. The art of focusing one's attention on the Supreme and giving one's love to Him is called Krishna Consciousness. We have inaugurated that Krishna Consciousness movement so that everyone can satisfy his propensity for loving others simply by directing his love towards Krishna. The whole world is very eager to satisfy the dormant propensity of love for others, but the various invented methods like socialism, communism, altruism, humanitarianism and nationalism, along with whatever else may be manufactured for the peace and dependency of the world, are all useless and frustrating because of our gross ignorance of the art of loving Krishna. Generally, people think that by advancing the cause of moral principles and religious rights, they will be happy. Others may think that happiness can be achieved by economic development, and yet others think that simply by sense gratification they will be happy. But the real fact is that people can be happy only by loving Krishna. Krishna can...
So, any questions? Ben? Dai, any questions? Okay. Pop, you want to read?
Sure. Krishna can perfectly reciprocate one's loving propensities in different relationships called mellows or rasas. Basically, there are 12 loving relationships. One can love Krishna as the supreme unknown, as the supreme master, the supreme friend, the supreme child, the supreme lover. These are the 5 basic love rasas.
Rasas.
Rasas. One can also love Krishna indirectly in 7 different relationships, which are apparently different from the 5 primary relationships. All in all, however, if one simply reposes his dormant loving propensity in Krishna, then his life becomes successful. This is not a fiction, but is a fact. that can be realized by practical application, one can directly perceive the effects that love for Krishna has on his life.
Everyone wants to show compassion and love for others, but we have to know the process how to do that. Sometimes people say, I want to love everyone. Now, how practically can you do that?
Impersonally.
How can you love impersonally?
Yeah.
Love is personal.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought that I'm going to love everyone?
No.
Have you ever thought that, Ben?
Yes.
And how did you plan on doing that?
Whoa, I had no idea.
So, Krishna consciousness is the art, science, culture, and philosophy of how to turn the one switch that lights up the love everywhere. What are the tree at the root? Find the root, the source of all energies, apply your love there, and then you are loving everyone and everything. Otherwise you can't. People can't even love all their family members. They can't even love all the persons in their family. They like this brother, they don't like the other one. They love their mother, they can't stand their father. And yet they want to talk about loving everyone. Not possible. And even though it's impossible for them to love all human beings, even if they could and they can't, that's still so limited. What about the other species of life? They want to love all the human beings and munch on all the animals. But they can't even love all the human beings. Just try loving all the human beings in Auckland. Just try loving all the human beings in your family. Can't do that. Just try so-called loving one person for your whole life. They can't even do that. So there seems to be a big problem in the love department. No problem in the lust department, but there's a big problem in the love department. Lust basically means exploitation and cheating. I don't know who I am, you don't know who you are, but let's just try to squeeze out some feeling from one another. Any questions? Someone who's attracted to Krishna has no time for lust. Squeezing the shadow. Second, like I move my hand like that, you see the shadow right down there. So, lust means squeezing the shadow, ignoring the reality. The reality is that Krishna is the source of all attraction. But we ignore Krishna and try to squeeze the shadows of matter in this temporary material world. You think you see something. Where was it we were discussing that? Was that also in New Plymouth? About the shooting stars in the sky? Somewhere I was discussing about. Huh? On Friday. You see, you know, you look in the sky, the night sky, and you think you see, you know, a shooting star. Or even a UFO. They tell all your friends, did you see it? I saw it. So that's what it's like to think you're attracted to something in this world. You think you see something. I see love. I see beauty. I see happiness. Did you see it? I saw it. And then some days later, I guess I really didn't see it. But Krishna is the unlimited source of real attraction, eternal attraction. So it is Krishna that we're really looking for, instead of all the temporary, insufficient sources of attraction in this world. So once you can get a grip on yourself, understand you're not the body, you're not the mind, you're spirit, soul, and that you are searching for attractions, you're becoming attracted by things, then you find out the best thing to be attracted by. That's what Krishna consciousness is about. And when you read the Krishna book, you'll understand why Krishna is the all-attractive. So put it on your recommended reading list. Any last points? You're reading Krishna book of Asia? Alright, thank you very much.